Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to Luke's English Podcast. How are you doing today? I hope you're doing fine and that you are ready for another episode in which you can practice listening to English as it is spoken by humans. In this case, me and my dad, because my dad's back on the podcast today. He's written a new book and it's available now. The book is called A River Avon Year, The Wildlife and History of Shakespeare's Avon. And my dad is back on the podcast today to tell us all about it and to discuss some of the themes and stories which he has written about. This is his second book. The first one, which came out in 2020, was called Park Life, A Year in the Wildlife of an Urban Park. He talked about that on this podcast in episode 690, as some of you may remember. Well, now he's written the sort of sequel to that book, and so naturally, we had to do a podcast about it too. So this new book is all about a river called the River Avon, which flows through the middle of England, very close to areas where I grew up and where my parents still live. And in the book, Dad uses this river and the path that it takes through the country as a way of telling a range of stories about British history and wildlife. And so those are the things that you will hear him talk about in this conversation. First, you'll get a bit of a history lesson as Dad describes a few very decisive battles that took place next to the banks of the river. These battles represent key moments in British history, including when the Romans took control of Celtic Britain in the first century, a medieval battle between the king and the barons following the creation of Magna Carta in the 13th century, a battle during the Wars of the Roses between the Yorks and Lancastrians in the 15th century, and a battle that took place during the English Civil War in the 17th century, which would ultimately result in the execution of the king at the time and the establishment of a kind of English republic. So, stories of battles that represent key moments in British history. And then there's a bit of a chat about wildlife, especially the birds that can be found near the River Avon. And finally, Dad talks about modern day questions about environmental issues connected to this river, including pollution and the cleanliness of Britain's rivers and waterways, and the controversial management of Britain's water system, which is a big political scandal that has been in the news a lot recently. So a history lesson, some nature and some politics from Rick Thompson in this episode, just touching on some of the things which you can read about in more detail in his new book, the details of which you are about to hear. So if you are looking for a good book to read in order to work on your English, then you could consider reading this one. My dad is an excellent writer. His descriptions are vivid, clear, and never unnecessarily complicated. You are bound to learn things on every single page. And of course, you know the author a bit as well now, which is nice. Okay, so let's now get started with this conversation with my dad, recorded just a couple of weeks ago at my parents' house, in my parents' garden. In fact, if you're listening to the audio version of this, then I will talk to you a bit more at the end. But without further ado, let's now get started. And here we go. Okay, we can start now. Hello, Dad. Here we are. Where are we?
We're in our back garden here in England.
yeah,
in the middle
right.
of England. It's actually quite a chilly day, but it's not bad.
It's February. Is this a good idea to be sitting outside?
Well, so far, February has been really mild and you know, we've been lucky. Sometimes February could be a terrible month, but we haven't had any rain much, no snow. Here in the middle of England, we tend to not get the bad weather these days. In Scotland, they get a lot of snow, but we haven't had any snow in the winter for several years now.
Mm. So, we're not going to get snowed on, but it might get a little bit chilly, but that's all right.
Yeah.
We're wrapped up fairly warm. You might hear some background noises, listeners, the sound of the police.
An ambulance going to the local hospital.
That's an ambulance, is it?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Right, so what are we doing then today? What are we talking about? You've written a new book, another one.
Yes, you wanted to hear about my new book.
Yes, I do, yeah.
Well, it's a book about a river, and it's called, I'll show you, it's called, it's just coming out, it's called A River Avon Year, and there's a subtitle, it says The Wildlife and History of Shakespeare's Avon, A Journey Through the Year from the Source to the River Severn.
Can you explain that subtitle?
Yes, I can. I mean, it's a little book which is about the wildlife of the local river that flows through here, through Warwick. But it's a bit more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there's a pathway called Shakespeare's Avon Way, because the river is known as Shakespeare's Avon. And it follows the river as closely as it can. And I've followed that through the year, January, February, March, April, as the seasons unfold, and have visited the towns along the way. It's about the wildlife as the year rolls on, but it's about a lot of other things. It's about the history that's taken place on the banks of this river. And it's about some folklore, and it's about some famous people, and it's about stories. So it's about a lot of different things.
Very nice. So A River Avon, is it worth mentioning the title of the name of the river?
It is, yes. It's quite confusing because there's a lot of River Avons in Britain. I think there are five in England and two in Scotland. And, for example, the city of Bristol is on the River Avon, but it's not this one. It's the Bristol Avon. This is known as Shakespeare's Avon or the Warwickshire Avon, and it flows right across the middle of England from northeast to southwest until it joins up with the longest river in Britain, the River Severn. Why Avon?
Why,
well,
yeah. What does Avon mean?
In the old Celtic language, that's before all the invasions that happened, starting with the Romans, Afon is still in Welsh, still means river. Afon means river. So the River Avon is a kind of a tautology. I think they call it a pleonism. There's an interesting word for you. A pleonism is a name which is the same thing twice. So it's the river. I can imagine the Romans coming and saying to their locals, what do you call that? And they said, Afon. So said, right, lads, it's the River Avon.
It's the River Avon, right.
But they were just
and the locals like these stupid Romans. They don't realise. They call it a river.
So we have a lot of Avons. This one is known as Shakespeare's Avon, and it actually goes through Stratford-upon-Avon. Shakespeare was born there and brought up on the banks of the Avon in the wooded side of the valley, which was called the Forest of Arden. And it appears in many of his plays as a kind of a sanctuary, an ideal place, the opposite of the corruption of the court and the city.
So the wildlife and history of Shakespeare's Avon, A Journey Through the Year from Source to Severn. Okay, what do you want to start with, the wildlife or the history?
Well, I think it's probably interesting to your listeners that it delves into a little bit of the history of England because of the battles that have taken place on the banks of the Avon at different times.
I have to say, the first part of the first chapter of the book is quite nice because you say this. This is page 2. It is a beautiful, shining river, but it has a dark past. The Warwickshire Avon, known as Shakespeare's Avon, runs through the heart of England like an artery. And over the centuries, it has been known to run red with blood, as key moments in the nation's history have been played out on its banks in vicious battles for the throne.
That's true.
Nice.
I mean, I can mention four of them.
Four battles. Yes.
All of them being key moments in British history, and all about taking over the country, all about power, and the battle for power, and in many cases, the throne, the crown. The Avon Way, Shakespeare's Avon Way, goes across an old Roman road called Watling Street. There are quite a lot of Roman roads intersecting the country. The Romans took over old ways, old Celtic routes, but also built some of their own. And this is a very long one called Watling Street.
Yeah.
Watling Street was originally an old Celtic route from the southeast to the northwest of England. And the Romans apparently paved it and widened it so that they could dominate the country by moving their troops quickly up and down the country, even chariots and wagons quickly up and down Watling Street. And it was on Watling Street somewhere near where the Avon crosses Watling Street, there was a battle shortly after the Romans had invaded Britain. And it was the key battle where the local Celts confronted a big Roman army. And it was it's called the Battle of Watling Street, or some historians call it the Battle of Boadicea, or Boadica. Boadica was a warrior queen who was in charge of the Iceni tribe, which occupied what is now East Anglia, east-southeast side of Britain. And her father did a deal with the Romans where he left, where he said when he died, he'd written a will to leave all his lands equally between his daughters and the Roman emperor, who was Nero at the time.
Okay.
But the Romans didn't follow that. When he died,
they didn't respect the deal. The deal.
They simply took everything. And not only that, they humiliated his wife Boadica and violated his daughters to show who was in charge.
Mm.
And this, of course, enraged the tribe of the Iceni, and they linked up with the neighbouring tribe called the Trinovantes, I think. And they formed a huge army and decided that they weren't going to take this from the Romans. And they went to what is now Colchester and burned it to the ground. The Romans had occupied it as a key centre and built a great temple there and got the locals to pay for it. And having done that, they then headed for what is now London, Londinium.
Mm-hmm.
And the Roman army knew that they couldn't face so many of them. So they withdrew, and Boudicca's army burned Londinium. And then they turned their attention to a bit further north, to a place which is now called St. Albans. And meanwhile, the Romans had gathered all their troops from around the country, and they intercepted them at Watling Street.
Right.
And there was this great battle. And the numbers involved, according to Tacitus, the Roman historian, were huge. You know, like he reckons there were 100,000 Celts amassed against about 10,000 legionaries of the Roman army. So they were outnumbered about 10 to 1.
So it was a massacre of the Romans, was it?
It was not.
No?
No.
Why not?
Well, according to Tacitus, the leader of the Roman legions basically gave them all a speech before the battle. And he said, pay no attention to all the noise of these savages. They're not real soldiers. They're not even properly armed. We're the professionals. Go in there with your spears, throw your javelins, push them down with your shields and finish them off with your swords.
Wow.
And that's what they did.
Because the Romans had all the technology and the methodology.
They had the armour, they had the discipline.
Yeah.
And training. And they basically did exactly what their commander had said. And according to Tacitus, about 80,000 people were killed.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that enormous? It's terrible. So
this is where the, as you called it, Watlington Street meets
Watling Street. Somewhere near the River Avon. Nobody's entirely sure where it was exactly.
Okay.
Because they don't even know what year it was. It was either AD 60... or it was either AD 61, it's not clear from the contemporary accounts. Equally, it's not entirely clear where it was, but we know that it was somewhere near the banks of the Avon.
Okay.
So that's battle one.
Whoa.
Well,
so that's
and the Romans secured their with that battle, the Romans had got Britain.
They took control.
Massacred the locals, and they took control.
Right, so that's a key moment in Britain's
Absolutely.
History, yeah. Okay. Around 61 AD?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So
They invaded Caesar did an exploratory visit in 54 BC, but they didn't come back seriously until a few years later than that. So it was only maybe 50 years after they'd really landed that this big battle took place.
Okay, okay.
So that's a nice bloody start, isn't it? I mean, I can tell you very briefly about, if we move forward to the 13th century, it's a big jump.
Into the medieval period.
Yeah. Early medieval
period. The 13th century.
Yeah.
Okay.
And further down the river in the Vale of Evesham. Evesham is a beautiful town on the banks of the Avon, in the middle of the rich farming country, notable for its fruit and its vegetables, still is to this day. Mm-hmm. And there was a battle at Evesham. And this one was a tussle between the king and the earls or barons who ran their part of the country. You may have heard of Magna Carta. Some of your listeners will have probably heard of Magna Carta. It was a document that King John was forced to sign by the barons, which gave them local power and gave them the ability to raise money, and because they felt that the king was basically milking them to fund his lifestyle and his battle.
Who were the barons, though?
Well, there were the various earls, Earl of Northumberland, the Earl of Yorkshire, Lancashire, all these territories. And they were powerful and they had armies. So if we jump on from the Magna Carta, which was a famous document, the first real constitution, if you like. If you move on to 1265, by then the earls and the barons felt that they hadn't got the deal they wanted.
So basically Magna Carta was all about these barons saying, look, this is unfair, the king's got too much power.
Indeed.
And they came to him and forced him to sign this kind of early version of a constitution, yeah. which a set of laws to say that, you know, you have to give us a certain amount of power, this is the deal. And
yes.
Then sometime later, the barons and earls decided, look, the king's not respecting our deal. Right, so they weren't happy.
Right. Well, by then it was Henry III.
Okay.
The king was Henry III. And the barons were very unhappy. And a guy called Simon de Montfort, he was the Earl of Leicester. He also had French origins, but that's not the point. Simon de Montfort reckoned that he had a legitimate
claim
to the throne.
How?
Basically, because his mother had been married to Henry II, I think.
Okay.
But the main point was that he and a lot of other barons had decided that they'd had enough, and they would depose the king and put his son, Prince Edward, Simon de Montfort's son, Prince Edward, on the throne instead. And they succeeded in defeating the king at a Battle of Lewes on the south coast of England.
Mm-hmm.
And Simon de Montfort ran Britain in the name of a king for some time.
Wasn't he called
very
the,
interesting man?
The king with no throne, or the king with no the throneless king, or
I
something.
I think he was the king with no crown.
Okay.
And he was noted for having a kind of parliament, the first one in the world. It wasn't a real democratically elected parliament like we're used to now, but he did invite lots of representatives from around the country to London to meet and discuss what they needed and what they wanted and what should be done about various issues. And these were earls, and they were clergy and military men from all over the country.
So this is Simon de Montfort, one of the Earl of Leicester, who decided that he had a claim to the throne, and there was a battle at Lewes, did you say?
Yes, it was Lewes.
And that was a decisive moment where power shifted in his favour, and he ruled essentially as the monarch, although he wasn't officially the monarch. It's okay. And then, so then what happened?
Well, in the end, he lost support. A lot of the barons changed sides, if you like. They'd obviously got promises from the king, and it wasn't going the way they wanted it to. They call this the Barons' Wars. There were a lot of conflicts around the country. It was a bit chaotic. But he lost a lot of support from the barons, and in the end, there was the battle at Evesham, which settled things. And Simon de Montfort's army were in Evesham by the river.
Yeah.
And the king's army, or in fact Prince Edward's army, backed by some of the other barons.
Wait, his own son?
No. There's another Edward.
There's another Edward. There's another Edward.
Don't worry about it. Yeah. All I can say to keep it simple is that he got defeated at Evesham. The opposing army outnumbered him 2-1, and they came down the hill, and he was trapped in a curve of the river. He was waiting for reinforcements, but they couldn't get across the river, and they were trapped, and there was a major slaughter at Evesham, which was the end of Simon de Montfort.
Yet more blood in the river again.
There was. They actually chopped his body into pieces and sent the pieces around the country to be displayed just in case any other barons had any ideas. So that was the Battle of Evesham. Lovely. The end of the Barons' War.
Okay. All right. So we're talking about blood in the river, blood, ladies and gents.
I'll keep it quick. The River Avon, the Warwickshire Avon, actually rises in to the east in the county of Northamptonshire at a small village called Naseby. And there's a spring there. And in the 1800s, somebody put a metal cone, where the spring is.
A spring, that's where natural water comes out of the ground.
That's right.
Natural water.
And,
I mean, spring water.
And this metal cone says, that, you know, the source of the River Avon. Unfortunately, the source is rather inconveniently moved, so there isn't any water coming out of this special spout.
Not anymore.
There hasn't been any water coming out of it for years.
Okay.
The source has moved about 100 yards away and trickles out of a pipe in somebody's garden. So that's the origins of the Avon, and it trickles away across the field. Okay. In Naseby, by as it happens, there was a crucial battle in the famous Roundheads and Cavaliers Civil War of the 1600s.
Yeah, but hold on, you've jumped ahead, because there's another battle, Dad. The Wars of the Roses.
Oh, yes, there certainly is.
In the 13th century. So we had 61 AD, Boadicea and the Celts versus the Romans. Then 1265, the Battle of Evesham, which was Simon de Montfort.
Trying to take over, and
Prince Edward came back and they slaughtered him and his army in the loop of the river. And then in 1471, there was another violent battle next to the river.
You are right. Not at Naseby, where the source of the river is, but at Tewkesbury, where the river finishes and joins the River Severn.
So we'll come back to Naseby,
in
a moment. But
Tewkesbury is the Wars of the Roses.
What were the Wars of the Roses? And by the way, people can now start thinking of Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Certainly maybe season one of Game of Thrones, which was the Wars of the Roses were the inspiration for stories.
And of
anyway.
Course, Shakespeare had done it first.
Yeah.
He'd written a trilogy of plays around Henry VI about the Wars of the Roses. So Game of Thrones was picking up what Shakespeare had done.
Mm-hmm.
It was at Tewkesbury. And the two big families who contested the throne were the Lancastrians, who were based in the northwest of England, and the Yorkists, based on the city of York, now in Yorkshire, on the east side of England.
Yeah, okay.
And the Lancastrians had the red rose as their emblem, and the Yorkists had the white rose as their emblem. That is why it's called the Wars of the Roses.
Two families that basically wanted to take control of the throne.
Yes, and they both thought they had legitimate claims to the throne. Henry VI was deposed by another Edward IV. And that was the Yorkists taking over from the Lancastrians.
Who was deposed by who?
Henry VI.
Henry VI was deposed by Edward IV. Okay, right. Lots of Henrys
and
Edwards.
It's pretty complicated, this.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a good story. And mm-hmm. in the end, Queen Margaret, the widow of the deposed king, wanted her son, another Edward, to be the king, and she had a lot of supporters, and they assembled an army, and the Yorkists, led by Richard of Gloucester, met in a big battle at Tewkesbury, and once again, the army that got trapped by the river was the army that lost, and there was another massacre, and the Lancastrian side, the earls there, fled into the Abbey Church at Tewkesbury, because they thought they could claim sanctuary. That was the way you do it. You go into the Abbey and claim sanctuary, and they can't touch you.
Those are the kind of rules of warfare.
Rules, yes. But the Yorkists weren't having any of that. They didn't respect the Abbey, and they dragged them all out and killed them all.
Oh, God.
There are stains on the floor of the Abbey Church, which people say, the stains from the blood that flowed across the floor.
Wow.
So that's the Battle of Tewkesbury. It's cheerful stuff, isn't it? So that pretty much saw the end of the Wars of the Roses, mm-hmm. With the Yorkists being triumphant, and in the end, Richard III, became king. And when the Tudor dynasty started, through marriage and alliances, they managed to get the two sides together, which is why the Tudor rose is a combination of the red rose and the white rose. It's a double rose.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a little bit of history for you, ladies and gentlemen. And very briefly, going onwards to the Civil War.
Civil War, 17th century, sort of middle of the 17th century.
Yeah.
English Civil War.
Dreadful period, a terrible period.
Yeah.
The Protestants were sick of the church being corrupt and the king having too much power, and Oliver Cromwell rose to be their leader, and he was a powerful military man, and they assembled a great big army of parliamentarians, as they're called, who wanted to establish a parliament and not just have the king ruling by decree. And it split the country into the royalists, who supported the king, and the parliamentarians, who supported Cromwell and Fairfax and the others. And they became known as roundheads or ironclads, the army of Oliver Cromwell. Tough, professional, and...
Roundheads because of their metal helmets.
They had round metal helmets.
Yeah.
And the royalists tended to be more flamboyant, and they were called cavaliers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, at Naseby, the two armies met after a series of battles, in a decisive one. And it's interesting that Charles I was the king, of course, and he was outnumbered. It was a huge battlefield. Apparently, it was foggy that day, and when the mist lifted, the Royalist army could see the Parliamentarian forces arrayed on the fields ahead of them. And it was 2 miles long, this battle line, with cavalry on the flanks, archers and spearmen in the middle.
Oh, my God.
And Charles decided that he would attack them, and he spurred his footmen forward. And so they attacked the centre of the lines, and they were doing okay, until a Scottish earl, described by historians as foul-mouthed, which meant that he swore a lot.
Lots of rude language.
he grabbed the king's bridle, and he said to him, "Will you go to your death?" in Scottish accents.
Wait, he grabbed the king's bridle, the straps on the horse's head. He held the horse, kind of thing.
Yeah, and the horse wheeled round. And this was seen by the soldiers down in the valley, and they thought it was a sign to retreat. So they
he grabbed them to say, "Will you not go to your death?" Meaning,
don't, it's too dangerous.
Don't go to your death. And because he grabbed the horse came round,
turned around,
and all the royalist soldiers thought that this was a sign to retreat.
That was a signal.
Or maybe they were looking for a sign to retreat.
Maybe they were. But they then turned around and fled, and they were pursued, and it went very badly for them. And Cromwell issued an order, get the king.
Mm-hmm.
Eschew all plunder but the man himself. and he was on his horse. He had two pistols. Apparently, he reached a place called Bloody Man's Ford, where he was surrounded by parliamentarian soldiers. But he used his pistols and spurred his horse through them and escaped. Charles I was not executed by the parliamentarians. They came to an arrangement where he was supposed to be just a king in name, and they would have their parliament.
Right.
And they did have their parliament. But Charles couldn't accept that and believed that he had a divine right, that God had made him king and everything else. And in the end, there was another civil war. It was twin civil wars. They sometimes call the civil war the civil wars because they had to do it again.
Yeah.
And the second time around, they didn't give him any mercy, and they cut his head off. So that was when we'd had our revolution. The French had a revolution and executed their royal family a few years later. So did the Russians. But ours is in 1645.
We did it first, everyone.
We did it first.
Yeah, how proud are we? We cut our king's head off first.
Yes. But the interesting thing was that having a king was popular. And however hard they tried, the parliamentarians, to get popular acceptance of this new arrangement, people still wanted a king. And after just 11 years, they brought back the monarchy with Charles's son, Charles II, called the Restoration. And the people who had executed his dad were thrown into jail. Cromwell gave up and went back to his farm. He'd done his best to get rid of the monarchy and make it a parliamentary democracy, but it hadn't been accepted.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay. There you go.
Well, that's just a little bit of a history lesson along the banks of the River Avon. But the rest of it's more cheerful. And there's very nice wildlife. There's some beautiful bird reserves along the way. And there are interesting little stories at some of these places. So that's what the book's about.
I guess you've written about the wildlife in the book. I mean, that's what the book is about, the history and the wildlife. What are some of your favourite things that you wrote about in terms of wildlife?
Well, it obviously changes as the seasons go by. Here we are now in early spring. And what you get is winter visitors of birds that come in for the winter. They're escaping the very hard weather in Scandinavia and Russia.
Up in the Arctic Circle.
We get quite a lot of birds coming in across the North Sea to spend their winter in more temperate climb here where they can get food. So you get a little thrush called a redwing, and there's plenty of those around at the moment, but they'll all fly back again to where they came from in March, probably. The redwings are very attractive. They have a stripy head, they have a creamy line over their eye, and they're called redwing because there's a gingery red flash on its side. It actually shouldn't be called a redwing. It should be called a red flank, because the gingery flashes on the side, not on its wing. But so you see red wings. There's a larger thrush called a field fare, which is also very colourful. And you have finches that, again, are escaping the worst of the weather. They come in from Scotland, and these little things called red poles, which are small birds that feed on seed heads, mm-hmm. and siskins, which are yellow and black. So there's all sorts of interesting birds in the wintertime. And then in the summertime, you get all the summer visitors, the warblers and the swallows and everything else.
Yeah.
So it's nice and interesting to see them arriving. One of the things that is interesting is that there's always climate change at the back of everything. Even here, where we don't get the extremes caused by climate change, not very often anyway, sometimes the river floods, seriously. Mm-hmm. But we have observations from organizations like ecological organizations where they take notes of when flowers appear, when insects appear and everything else. And we're definitely at least 2 weeks ahead from where we were just 30 years ago.
So in terms of the temperature, in terms of the way the flowers are growing, yeah. and so on, it's like 2 weeks ahead.
Yes.
Of.
So spring happens 2 weeks earlier by any measure, really. The effects of climate change are incredibly serious, obviously, and no one seems to be able to stop the greenhouse gas emissions which are causing it. And it's going to have profound effects. It's evident in a whole number of things. One of the less interesting or worse things is that there is a biodiversity crisis now.
Mm-hmm.
That is, the number of insects, the number of birds, number of everything, really, are falling, generally. Some species are doing all right, but a lot of species are not. Number of butterflies is right down. Number of moths is right down. And that's very serious. And it's obviously, they're pollinators, good for agriculture. And in many ways, it's climate change that's causing it. Some of it is intensive agriculture. Large fields which don't have any areas which are good for insects and feeding birds. So there is a bit of a biological biodiversity crisis, they call it, linked with the climate crisis and linked with the pollution crisis. These three things are interlinked.
Mm.
The river is not a bad example in England. A lot of the rivers in Britain are polluted. It's a national scandal.
Has it always been that way, or is this a recent thing, the pollution in the rivers?
It is post-industrial revolution, so they started getting polluted during the industrial revolution.
Right.
And there has been a drive to try to clean them up for quite a long time now. But according to people who monitor these things, it's now going into reverse, that after a period of time when the rivers got better and better, they're now going backwards again. And the main cause of that is that the system to get rid of our sewage is so old.
Sewage. That's the stuff that we flush down the toilet.
Yeah.
It goes down into the sewers. It becomes sewage and it has to be dealt with. How do we get rid of it?
Well, they have various plants that are supposed to process it, and so only clean water will go back into
the river.
When
you say plants, you don't mean the kind of plants that grow.
No.
But you mean plants like
industrial
facilities that are supposed to process it. Yes, okay.
And they're old and they need investment, and successive governments haven't invested enough in them. So when there's a heavy rainstorm, they get overwhelmed. And what the water companies do, and they are companies, our water industry is entirely privatized, what they do is they just push it out into the river. So every now and then there is a release of raw sewage into the rivers, and people recently have been noticing this is happening more and more and more often. And I think last year they reckoned 380,000 times raw sewage was emptied into Britain's rivers.
So this is an absolute scandal, and last year it really came to a head. You might have seen, I don't know if listeners out there pay attention to UK news, but last year there was a huge scandal about the condition and state of the rivers, and there being lots of raw sewage just pumped directly into the rivers, which is absolutely shocking. Especially when you consider that, you know, a lot of people live near the rivers, people are fishing in the rivers, people are playing near the rivers, people are going on the rivers. You know, it's not like these rivers are remote and far away from us. We live very close to them. So that is absolutely shocking, like raw sewage being pumped into the rivers. Now, why does this happen? You mentioned it, that the water companies are private companies. I mean, it's there's a bit of politics involved in it, but this is the, what happens. What happens?
The utilities, which includes water. Some people think that it should be a nationalised or national facility, and it shouldn't be in the hands of companies that are there to make profit out of it.
Why?
Because they pay their shareholders dividends, and the woman who runs the local water supply system here in the middle of England is paid nearly £4 million a year. And people are saying, you say you can't afford to, you know, clean everything up, and yet you're paying large amounts to your private investors, and you're paying your top executives stupidly huge amounts of money. That's why people are angry that they can't invest more money in cleaning up.
Because as private companies, their purpose is to make sure that their shareholders get large dividends. Their purpose is to make profit, the profit that they make doesn't get reinvested into the system, into the infrastructure. Instead, that profit gets given to their private investors and shareholders and directors and so on in the form of bonuses and things like that. So this is the scandal, is the fact that these companies are not reinvesting in the system. They're paying huge sums of money to their shareholders and stuff, and they're not, and they are pumping raw sewage into that and to our waters, and then they're saying, oh, we have to do it, this, you know, we can't afford to upgrade the system.
Yes, and of course, a lot of the pollution does come from farming. If it's not properly regulated, and again, that needs more investment. So, you know, cattle sludge goes into the river.
Cow poo.
From pig farms, stuff goes in. From chicken farms, stuff goes in. And from arable farms, where they grow crops, it's pesticides that can get into the water course. So it's quite a complicated issue. The company that runs the middle of England, which includes this River Avon, is better than most. And they have got a plan, a four-year plan, first of all, monitoring the water, and then with a whole number of different initiatives to try to reduce the amount of pollution by a specific amount. The problem for them is that every now and then the Avon has a massive flood. And okay. With climate change, it's likely to happen more often. We are talking about major floods where Evesham, as mentioned before, Tewkesbury, where Avon joins the Severn, it gets completely cut off sometimes. The floods are massive. The biggest flood was in 2007 when Tewkesbury was cut off for weeks and they didn't have any fresh water because the water was polluted. They've been building protections along the Avon and the Severn to protect the towns from flooding. But that's just basically a temporary measure. What they've got to do is improve the way that the water is siphoned off when it reaches a certain height into great tanks and into areas that it won't do any damage. So it takes bunds, which are big earthen defences, and metal defences, and all sorts of things that have to be done to protect the towns of Evesham, Pershore, Bewdley, other places, which keep on getting flooded.
Right. Okay.
So there you go. The Avon's an interesting river. It can be beautiful and calm and glassy and full of wildlife. And other times it can be brown and racing and dangerous. And sometimes it can be polluted. Talk about pollution. I read somewhere that France has 1,300 designated bathing areas in rivers and lakes around the country.
Mm-hmm.
We've got two.
Two?
Two that are regarded as being good enough quality for people to bathe. We've got two designated bathing areas.
I mean, to be fair, France is twice as big.
Well, yeah, but even
still,
so.
Two.
So a lot of people are now trying to make their local river quality enough for bathing, and there are regulations there which they can exploit to demand that the water company keep it safe.
When you say bathing, that means swimming or just generally just going in the water?
Swimming, paddling, whatever.
Yeah, okay. Very interesting stuff, Dad. So all of this kind of thing is included in your book. So listeners, if you are interested in reading it, you can. It's available now. You've got the history stuff. There's the nice descriptions of beautiful wildlife and some comments about the kind of political and climate change situation all included in there. A River Avon Year by Rick Thompson. Where can people actually get a copy of this?
It's available online, obviously from Amazon, but the Book Depository is a good online bookstore.
Bookdepository.com.
Like, and they say the Book Depository, and they say it's free worldwide postage delivery.
Free delivery, yeah. Okay. All right.
So, and it's only cost £10, £10. The idea of this book is to be a slightly old-fashioned format, so that it's got a little sketch, a pen and ink sketch at the beginning of each chapter, and each chapter is got subheadings chopped up. And this is the way old-fashioned wildlife and natural history books were done. So I've deliberately made it, you know, slightly old-fashioned style, and it means it's easy to read.
I should say that, listeners, as well as all these other things that my dad does, he's also a very good artist and illustrator, and the book is full of his own illustrations. I'm showing to the video viewers at this point the cover of the book, which shows two kingfishers drawn by you, Dad. And as you say, at the beginning of each chapter, there's something. Here are two great crested grebes. Beautiful birds that you might see on the river, and every chapter has a different illustration at the beginning of it, including a hand-drawn map, a bit like J.R.R. Tolkien would have done.
That's right.
At the beginning of his book.
Not quite as interesting as his.
Not quite, but still, it's a lovely looking map that you've drawn of the Warwickshire Avon, and we show the different places that we've mentioned in this episode. And other lovely little illustrations. I'm just randomly.
Well, you're doing a great plug. That's an interesting.
There's
one.
There's a picture of a murmuration of starlings here, which is when starlings in huge flocks fly together in the sky and make these incredible shapes and patterns. Yeah. And other interesting things.
The old-fashioned books used to always have a little sketch here and there just to punctuate it, so I thought I'd do the same thing.
Wonderful. There's a picture of one of my favourite birds here, a barn owl.
Yeah.
Picture of a barn owl drawn by Dad. Really nice.
The barn owl is found nearly all over the world. It's you know, in Asia, Africa, Americas. It's the white owl. But in this country, its numbers have been falling quite heavily because of the way farming has become more intensive. But it's made a dramatic comeback, mainly because of a barn owl conservation scheme, human intervention, putting up loads and loads of barn owl boxes, thousands of them, and persuading farmers to leave a little bit of ground rough where the mice and voles will live. And the barn owl numbers have bounced right back. So you can reverse the decline in biodiversity by taking the right kind of actions.
Beautiful birds, and silent, completely silent when they fly. And I remember James and I went down the lane a few years ago when you were living in your previous house. You said to us when we were visiting one weekend, oh, there's people have been spotting a barn owl in the field down the road. If you go down this evening at dusk, you might see it. So James and I went off down the lane and went into the field and crept along next to the hedge, trying to make no noise. And we sat there for about 20 minutes waiting in exactly the spot that you told us to wait, and, you know, getting a bit cold. And then we saw this thing in the distance, in the half light. It looks almost like a ghost. It was like this white sort of white little ghost flapping around very mysterious moment, and it's got like this flat face. So the face, you can see this face with wings flying around in the distance, and it was very odd. It's kind of like, "Whoa, is that it? What's that?" And it's these kind of soft flapping wings and this flat face, and it would float around above the field, and every now and then drop down to try and catch something.
Yeah, this amazing. Is a beautiful bird, and as you say, it is completely silent. Its feathers are amazing, and it makes no sound at all. And in experiments, they've discovered that it can judge distance. It's got terrific hearing. It can judge distance as well as direction, because one ear is slightly further forward than the other one, which gives it the ability to pinpoint where the mouse is in the grass.
So it's not just left, right, up, so down, but in forward and back as well.
So it can hunt in total darkness. How about that?
Just by listening.
By listening.
So it's got kind of like 360-degree listening abilities. Amazing. Amazing stuff. Okay, Dad, thanks very much for talking to us again,
okay.
This time about book number two, A River Avon Year. Lovely, okay. And we didn't get snowed on or rained on. And very nice. The sun didn't really come out.
But no, it's a bit grey.
Tomorrow the sun's going to come out.
Yes.
Okay, thanks very much.
Nice to talk to you.
You too.
Bye for now.
So, listeners, hello there. Here we are in the ending part of this episode. This is where I chat to you a bit more before the episode finishes. This is only available in the audio version, by the way, you lucky audio people. So thanks again to my dad, Rick Thompson, for yet another episode. And yeah, why not consider picking up a copy of this book? My dad has basically self-published it, or published it independently, so it's not receiving the kind of attention that it might receive if it was being published by a major publishing company. In those cases, like when a book is published and picked up by a big publishing company, in those cases, they usually do a lot of marketing and advertising and arrange for the book to be featured on various websites or to be reviewed in big newspapers and magazines or to be featured in the windows of major bookshop chains. So this book is not getting that kind of marketing exposure because he's gone the direct route and chosen to publish it independently. But this is a wonderful book, and my dad is a great writer who deserves, you know, to be read, basically. So if you enjoyed his last book, Park Life, then you are bound to like this one too. It is also full of vivid, charming descriptions, interesting facts and insights into British history. And it is easy to read. My dad has great control over language and is a lover of language, but his writing is never overcomplicated or too fancy. I think it's an excellent model for anyone out there learning English. So check it out. A River Avon Year. The full title, A River Avon Year, The Wildlife and History of Shakespeare's Avon, A Journey Through the Year from Source to Severn. Severn, by the way, is the name of one of the longest rivers in Britain, the longest river in England, the River Severn, S-E-V-E-R-N. Okay, so that's what that means, a journey through the year from Source to Severn. From Source, meaning the origin of the river, to Severn, which is the larger river that the Avon joins up with. Okay. So that's, if you just search for Rick Thompson, A River Avon Year, you'll find it. Also, of course, you'll find a link to Amazon on the page for this episode and in the episode description, where you can buy the paperback. Dad also mentioned the Book Depository. That's bookdepository.com, which is another online bookshop that you can, you know, consider. Yes, I mean, I don't know if both those websites deliver or serve to absolutely every corner of the world. Not that the world is a square, but that is a phrase that we say, that all corners of the world. But in any case, I hope that you can manage to get a copy of this book somehow. It's not available in Kindle version, unfortunately. That's just the way it is. And there's no audiobook version of it at this stage. But I hope that you can get a copy of it. Okay. Thank you for your comments, by the way, after I published last week's episode, which was that conversation about the language of children and childcare with Anna from English Like a Native. Thank you for your comments after listening to that episode. because, well, if you missed that and you didn't hear, well, I said in that episode that my wife is pregnant. She's having a baby. We are having a baby. Well, technically, she is having a baby. The due date for the arrival of child two is at the beginning of July. That's not the name that we've chosen. We're not just going to call this child child two. We will actually give the child a proper name, of course. But anyway, the due date is at the beginning of July. Thanks for your comments. People have written nice things saying congratulations and stuff like that. That's lovely. Thank you very much. And also thank you for your understanding regarding how this might affect the podcast in the summer. Obviously, I'm talking to the people who actually understand, the people who are willing to understand that it might affect my publishing. If you don't understand that, then I'm not talking to you. I'm not saying thank you to you, obviously. But that's just the thing we say, isn't it, in English? We say thank you for your understanding, just assuming that people understand. But anyway, thank you for your understanding regarding how this might affect the podcast in the summer. I'm always suggesting, aren't I, that the podcast might pause for a while. For example, it gets close to the summer holidays and I sort of say, oh, I think that you might get no episodes for a few weeks because I'll be on holiday. You know, I always say that, but then I always manage to keep going and publishing new episodes throughout those periods. But we will see what happens this time. You know, having a newborn baby often means that you have to focus on that. And I will be taking paternity leave, you know, parental leave, so I can focus exclusively on looking after the baby and being there for my wife and also our daughter as well. Thank you for your understanding if it affects my publishing of the podcast. Like I said before, I might take a couple of months off, but who knows? I might be able to still find ways to keep podcasting. Maybe I'll record loads of episodes between now and the summer, and I can sort of publish those while I'm taking some time off. Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? Or maybe I'll just be focusing on that, on just sleeping during all of that time. Like literally between now and July, I'm just going to be like, right, I'm only going to sleep now. That's it. No more podcast. I'm just going to sleep 24 hours a day just to try to make up for the fact that potentially in July, I will never sleep properly again for the rest of my life. I don't know. But we'll see what happens. It all depends on how everything goes. Anyway, thank you for listening to this episode. Thank you to my dad for his contribution to another episode of this podcast. But that's all for this one. No more rambling at this point. I will be back in your speakers and headphones soon with more new content for you to listen to. Okay, all right, good. Leave your comments in the comment section. Don't forget to leave nice reviews of the podcast wherever you subscribe to it and all that sort of thing. You could consider making a donation through PayPal on my website if you want to support the show. And of course, Luke's English Podcast Premium is there to allow me to use my particular set of teaching skills to help you with your English, to develop your vocabulary, and to help you practice your pronunciation and sort of push your pronunciation by repeating after me, allowing you to focus on things like word stress, sentence stress, pausing, emphasis, intonation, and all, of course, vowel sounds, consonant sounds, combinations of consonant sounds, all those sorts of things, to get bonus episodes from me in which I actually use my teaching skills more directly and clearly rather than just presenting you with interesting things to listen to. You could sign up to Luke's English Podcast Premium and you can add all the premium episodes to your podcast list in your podcast app of choice. That's how it works. Okay, to get more information, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info. And if you want to sign up, it's teacherluke.co.uk/premium. Okay? Okay. All right then, I'll speak to you again soon. But for now, it's time to say goodbye. Bye, bye, bye. And by the way, you're probably going to get a little announcement again at the end of this episode. I do little automatic announcements. There's one at the beginning, which you always hear. okay, where I say Luke's English podcast, blah, blah, blah. You can also get my premium content when I use my particular set of skills, that before the jingle. And there's another one at the end as well, isn't there, after the jingle, where I say you could consider signing up to LEP Premium. Even though I've just said that, you're going to hear me say it again. But you know what? If you do sign up to premium episodes, then all of those things get removed, those little adverts, or those automatic little things, and also automatic adverts that might be inserted into the podcast while you listen, depending on where you are, those get removed as well if you become a premium subscriber. So, you know, just something to consider. Okay, so I'll continue saying goodbye, bye-bye now. Okay, because I interrupted myself doing that. I'm going to continue doing that right now. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.